మధువన సంచారి శ్యామమురారి.
ద ఫస్ట్ వర్డ్ హియర్ ఇస్ మధువన, రెఫరింగ్ టు మధు అండ్ వన. మధు మీన్స్ హనీ అండ్ వన మీన్స్ ఫారెస్ట్. Lord Krishna, as a young cowherd, would take his cows for grazing to the forest of Madhuvana. He would make them drink the cool nectarine waters of Madhukunda, a water body there. He would dance with the gopis and the gopalas on the banks of this Madhukunda in the autumn season. And at that time, Madhuvana was filled with kalpavriksha trees, covered with the most nectarine beehives that produce the sweetest honey or madhu. And that is perhaps the reason why this forest came to be known as Madhuvana, filled with honey, filled with sweetness. This is one meaning of Madhuvana, and as we move on in this program, we will discover more. Let's move on to the second word, which is Sanchari, which means he who roams. The third word is Shyama, which is one of the names of Lord Krishna, meaning one with a complexion as dark as the rain-bearing clouds. Swami explains, Krishna is described as blue in physical color, because he is as deep and inscrutable as the blue sky or the blue waters, the infinity that pervades up and below. Blue is actually the color of infinity that the eye comprehends, although the sky has no color at all. So too, Krishna has no color or attributes, but in order to comprehend him, in order to fathom him, in order to give him an attribute, the mental eye gives him the color of blue. Bhagavan also says Krishna draws the mind away from sensory desires towards divinity, towards sublimity. It pulls us away from everything else because everything else is inferior and less valuable. Krishna satisfies the deepest thirst of man, the thirst of man for peace, for joy, for wisdom. And that is why he is Meghashyama, dark blue as the rain cloud. The very sight of the rain cloud is so refreshing. That is how refreshing is the Lord. So those are some of the ways of understanding this word Shyama. Moving on, the fourth word is Murari. He is Murari because he slayed the demon Mura. Mura in Sanskrit means to cover. All of us are covered by the ignorance of our true nature. We think of ourselves as the body, whereas we are actually much, much more than the body. We are indeed the Atma, the eternal soul. So the demon Mura represents our ignorance, and Lord Krishna bears the name Murari because he destroys this ignorance and enlightens us. So when we sing this line, Madhuvana Sanchari Shyama Murari, we can fill our mind with such sublime thoughts. We can think of the Lord who is the inscrutable one of blue color, who is one of sweetness filled with the fragrance of honey. He is the one who satisfies our deepest thirst for peace and joy. And he is the one who helps us overcome our body attachment and weaknesses and elevates us. Let's move on to the second line.
Shri Madhusudana Muralidhari.
Here the first word is Shri. Shri is a term of respect while addressing any gentleman in Indian culture. Sometimes in this line, instead of Shri, He is also used. Bhagwan has sung this bhajan using He Madhusudana, and sometimes as Shri. The second word is Madhusudana. This is in fact one of the thousand names of the Lord in the sacred Vishnu Sahasranamam. It means he who slayed the evil demon Madhu. Now Madhu is a term used in Vedanta or philosophy to refer to the fruits of actions. Since the Lord destroys the effects of the fruits of our actions, he bears the name Madhusudana. Bhagavan also says Madhu means something which is sweeter than even honey. And for humans, what is sweeter than honey? Swami says it is ego. Yes, ego is so dear to every person. Every person holds on to their ego as if it is sweeter even than honey. And Swami says the Lord comes to destroy this ego. That is why he is Madhusudana. In fact, that brings to mind a very revealing incident narrated by Professor Kasturi in his autobiography, Loving God. Once, after a tour of North India, Bhagwan directed Professor Kasturi to go to Mumbai by plane from Hyderabad and wait for him there at Dharmakshetra. Professor Kasturi had just finished a packed schedule of talks drawn up for him by the state president of many states like West Bengal, Odisha and so on, and he was feeling highly elated after he reached Dharmakshetra. He was eager to express his joy to Bhagwan over the hundreds of devotees who had thronged to hear the Lord's glory from him. He also wanted to tell Bhagwan about the various miracles that he had witnessed and the wonderful service being rendered by the sevadals that he had seen and so on. When Bhagwan finally came to Dharmakshetra, Kasturi stood on the steps leading to the door of the hall and Swami asked him, "When did you reach here?" And Kasturi sir replied, "2 days ago, Swami." Bhagwan then sped up the marble steps with the three devotees who had travelled with him in the car. Kasturi followed Swami and stood before the door of Bhagwan's room, but the door was closed. So he waited and waited. And finally, when there was no response for more than an hour, Kasturi went down to the room he had been allotted in Dharmakshetra. During dinner time, he sat along with the others on the floor facing Bhagwan's table. Bhagwan was indeed bubbling with fun even while propounding profound truths, but not once did Swami speak to Professor Kasturi as he usually did. And this was very unusual because Professor Kasturi had returned from such a long trip. He was so disappointed, he lost all taste for food, sleep deserted him, restlessness set in, and he was so despondent. Why was Bhagwan not talking to him? He feared that he might not be called to translate Bhagwan's Telugu discourse, and that is the very assignment for which he had come to Dharmakshetra. But fortunately for him, Bhagwan did give him that opportunity. He did translate a discourse, and Kasturi felt that Swami had pardoned him for whatever mistake he may have done. And so he decided not to inquire about his mistake, and nor was he able to actually discover it on his own. So he followed Bhagwan and others into the room on the first floor after the discourse. He stood there and stared, but again, there was this cold treatment from Bhagwan. He did not speak a word to him. Crestfallen, Kasturi went down to his room and now wrote a letter to Bhagwan, pouring his heart's sorrow. But this letter only got smudged due to his copious tears, and then he just brushed that letter aside and told himself, anyway, Swami knows everything, why should I write to him? And he spent an hour of tossing about. He just could not sleep, and then suddenly Mr. Indulal Shah came up to him and said, "Kasturi, it's dinner, Swami is coming." And so Kasturi went to the dining room, and even though he ate, he was feeling miserable. He was inwardly praying to Bhagwan to save him, to forgive him and be the usual self. Later in the day, Mr. Indulal Shah came down from Bhagwan's room with a broad grin, and he told Professor Kasturi, "Baba is leaving for Ahmedabad by the 5 o'clock flight. Be ready. We return the day after." So the moment Professor Kasturi heard this news, he was in delight. He just closed the room and he was jumping up and down in happiness, in sheer joy that he was actually now again part of Baba's troop to go to Ahmedabad. So he prostrated on the floor thanking Bhagwan, and he was ready the next day by 3 a.m. even though they were supposed to be ready by 5 a.m. and he was sitting there very tense and very expectant, and he was wondering, will Bhagwan again now start talking to him? And that morning, when Mr. Indulal Shah came to his room, even before he could ask anything, Professor Kasturi got up and said, I'm ready, brother. But Mr. Indulal Shah said, "I'm sorry, you are not wanted in this trip." And you can imagine the state of Professor Kasturi. It felt almost the whole world had crashed on his head. Somehow he reconciled himself, and when Bhagwan's group returned after this trip back to Mumbai, now to continue this series of ordeals that he was going through, Professor Kasturi was now ordered to go back by train from Mumbai to Puttaparthi. Swami and the group that accompanied Bhagwan, they would fly to Hyderabad from Mumbai and then reach Bangalore. But Professor Kasturi was not in that group. He was to travel in the train. And Professor Kasturi says he felt like hiding somewhere and just disappearing, but he could not, because the Sanatan Sarathi magazine had to be put through the press and posted. There was no time to even shed a tear or mourn. So he just returned to Puttaparthi and got busy with his work. And when Bhagwan finally returned to Puttaparthi, the torture for Kasturi continued. He would go to Bhagwan's room and he would stand leaning against the wall and he would listen to the hearty laughter of everyone else there having those beautiful interactions, delightful sessions with Swami, which he was always part of but now deprived of. And he felt so lost, so helpless. Deep inside, it was a pain that was tearing into every pore of his being, and several days passed like this. The cold treatment from Bhagwan continued. And later, after the duties for the Sanatan Sarathi magazine were done, Professor Kasturi spent a few days at Bangalore with his daughter and her children. And when he heard that Bhagwan had reached the Brindavan Ashram in Bangalore, he went there. Very nervously, he inched his way to Bhagwan's room. And when he went there, Swami smiled at him. And now he felt so encouraged, so he went. And just to have some conversation with Swami, he said, "Swami, my grandson Prasad has got a seat in the Technology Institute." Bhagwan heard that, but very coldly he said, "Let that be, okay." And then Bhagwan started reprimanding him. Swami said, "What has happened to you? Your pride is unbearable. Your swollen head will burst someday, Kasturi. What did you do in Odisha? You should get a merciless spanking." Those were the words of Bhagwan, and Professor Kasturi pleaded, saying he didn't know what Bhagwan was referring to, what happened in Odisha that Swami is so upset about. And Swami said, "Ah, you don't know?" And Swami went to the next room and he opened a handbag and he brought out a printed sheet of paper containing the schedule of Kasturi's program in Odisha as fixed by the organizers. And then Bhagwan placed his finger on one entry and holding it before Kasturi's eyes, he ordered him to read it. And Swami said, "See what is written here. 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. Interviews with prominent personalities." And Professor Kasturi tried to understand what Bhagwan was referring to. He took some time to recover and then he said, "Yes, Swami, on my upward journey to Calcutta in the Howrah Express, the secretary of that organization joined me at Khurda Road station in Odisha and he consulted me about the program and he said, 'Can you meet some teachers and others who would like to know more about Baba?' And I said, 'Of course.'" And then Bhagwan asked, "When you saw this announcement, did you tell them that it was wrong?" And Kasturi meekly said, "No, Swami." And Bhagwan replied, "There lies your pride, your bloated ego." And now, the moment Bhagwan said this, Professor Kasturi was in tears. He fell at Bhagwan's feet. And in fact, he was so grateful that Bhagwan was chiding him and plucking the ego by its roots. And the merciful Bhagwan then continued, "Get up, send a telegram to those people that if they repeat such nonsense, you will not enter Odisha." And Kasturi said, "I shall do, Swami." And later, as he writes this episode, Professor Kasturi admits that when he first saw those words on the paper, "Interviews with prominent personalities," he says, "I must confess that the Odisha debacle happened because the words 'prominent personalities' tickled me, as did the word 'interviews with VIPs.' Of course, I rationalized the situation and justified my silence acceptance as an exhibition of good manners or even of disdain," Professor Kasturi says. "But Baba knew that my ego felt elated when the word 'personalities' and 'prominent personalities' were ushered in for the interview." He says this revealed a deep spiritual flaw and Swami graciously undertook to correct it. Kasturi sir was so dear to Swami and Swami was so concerned about his beloved devotee's spiritual progress that he did not want even an iota of ego to surface in his character. And that is the reason why Professor Kasturi was so much loved by everyone, because he was so close to the Lord's heart. So that's how the Lord destroys our ego. He is Madhusudana and he fills our being with Madhu, with his divine nectar, which is even sweeter than Madhu. Now, the other word in this line is Murali Dhari, coming from Murali, the flute that Lord Krishna plays, and Dhari means to hold. The Murali, or the Indian flute made from bamboo reed, is what Lord Krishna places on his lips and out comes divine tunes, mesmerizing gopalas, gopikas, cows, trees, plants and the entire creation. That flute rested on the Lord's lips and emanated such soulful music. And what is the qualification of the flute for this blessing? Baba says, because the flute is simple, straight and hollow. Hollow with no ego, straight with no crookedness, and simple with absolutely no ostentation. So there again, the Lord is telling us how every time we sing Muralidhara, we have to pray to the Lord to make us as egoless, as simple and as light and beautiful like the flute. So in this line, Sri Madhusudana Muralidhari, we call out to the loving Lord who spares no effort in uprooting our ego, the Lord who exhorts us to become beautiful instruments, to be carriers of His music and His love by eliminating our ego and allowing ourselves to be channels of His music and His beauty and His love. Let's move on now to the third line.
Madhuvana Sanchari Shama Murari.
This is a repeat of the first line. If we take the word Madhuvana, Swami says Madhuvana also represents our heart. Madhuvana Sanchari means the Lord who roams in the devotee's heart. And when does our Lord pervade our heart? Only when the heart becomes sweet as Madhu, with all the noble virtues emanating the fragrance of sacred qualities. Moving on, we earlier saw that the color blue represents something very deep. Hence the name Shama is very apt, because the Lord resides in the depth of our hearts. We also saw that Murari means one who removes our ignorance. So in this context, it refers to the Lord who removes all that is negative in us and fills us with the sweetness of positivity. Let's move on to the fourth line.
Madhava Mohana Mayura Mukutadhara.
The first word here is Madhava, in name of Lord Krishna again. It can be split as Ma and Dhava, meaning husband. Ma refers to not only Mother Lakshmi, the goddess of all types of prosperity and wealth, but Prakriti, it refers to nature. In another context, Swami says Ma also refers to Maya, illusion. So Madhava is the one who is the master of nature, who has mastery over illusion. The name Madhava also means the Lord who is experienced by the seeker who has stilled his mind through Mauna, Dhyana and Yoga. This is supported by a phrase in the Mahabharata which says that Ma stands for Mauna, that is silence, Dha stands for Dhyana, that is meditation, and Va stands for yoga or spiritual practices. So the Lord is called Madhava because He Himself is endowed with silence, meditation, and He is the epitome of all spiritual practices. He silently observes the mental, physical and intellectual activities of all beings. He is the ever non-interfering observer, the eternal witness, the master of all creation, Madhava. Mohana means he who is enchanting and captivating. Mayura means peacock. Mukutadhara. Mukuta means crown and dhara means to wear. Mayura Mukutadhara means who has the peacock feathers on his crown. In fact, on one occasion while speaking to the students about Lord Krishna in the Vrindavan hostel in Bangalore, Swami spontaneously, very casually asked for a towel to be brought and he wrapped it around his head and he said, "See, this is how Lord Krishna used to tie a cloth around his head. He did not have a crown on his head all day long. It was just this cloth which was tied in the simple, elegant manner." And Swami said, "Peacocks were in plenty there." So playfully, Lord Krishna would place a peacock feather on his simple headgear. Peacock is undoubtedly one of the most beautiful creations of the Lord. And in fact, peacock is the vehicle of Lord Subramanya, Lord Muruga, just like the mouse is the vehicle of Lord Ganesha. So in this line, Madhava Mohana Mayura Mukutadhara, we call out to the Lord who is the master of Mother Nature, who represents all types of prosperity and wealth, master of nature, master of illusion. He is the enchanting one with the lovely peacock feathers on his crown. Let's move on to the fifth line.
Mathura Natha Prabhu Giridhare.
Here the first word is Mathura. The second word is Natha, which means master. Bhagavan says Mathura is not just a geographic location referring to the birthplace of Lord Krishna. Mathura is the heart suffused with nectarous love. That is Mathura. Another interpretation he gives is that Mathura signifies our chitta. Mathura Natha means he who rules our chitta. Chitta is our inner consciousness. Mathura Natha is one who presides our inner self. So Mathura Natha is one who presides our inner self. The third word here is Prabhu, which means Lord. This too is one of the 1000 names in the Vishnu Sahasranamam. It means one who has the supreme power to attract the minds of all towards himself. The fourth word is Giridhari. Giri means mountain and Dhari means he who holds. There are two instances of the Lord bearing the mountain upon himself. One was during the time of churning of the ocean of milk, when he assumed the form of the great tortoise to bear on his back the Mandara mountain, which was used as the churning stick. And the inner meaning of this episode is that the Lord supports the mind intellect of a spiritual aspirant, just like he supported that Mandara mountain while he or she is churning his own heart, this milk-like pure heart of devotion. When our mind and heart is churned, the Lord supports us. And how does this churning happen? This churning happens through Shravanam and Mananam, through study and reflection. And then in the end comes out Amrita, or the nectar of immortality. The other instance about the Lord carrying the mountain is the famous episode of the Lord bearing the Govardhana mountain. The residents of Gokul Vrindavan used to worship Lord Indra, the rain god. But on one occasion, as the story goes, little Krishna persuaded Nanda to stop the usual puja for Indra and instead worship the Govardhana hill. Indra was stung by this neglect and he poured terrible rains on the village. But Krishna held the Govardhana hill aloft on his little finger and he invited the entire village to take shelter under his protection, and he did this for 7 long days. So the Lord bearing the mountain is symbolic of his lifting the burdens of our lives. That is, if only we listen and surrender to him, if only we obey him. So in this line, we adore the Lord who is the Lord of Mathura, the one who rules our heart and consciousness, the one who protects us from hurdles, however mighty like mountain they may be. The Lord who is always there for his devotees. That is Mathura Natha, Prabhu Giridhari. Prabhu means Bhagwan, the Lord. Let's move on to the last line.
Mathura Natha Sai Giridhari.
Here the only new word is Sai, referring to our beloved Lord Sai. Sai, the Lord of our heart. Sai Giridhari, the protector of our beings. Sai, who is the center of our lives. So with that, we have got some understanding of the subtle meaning of this beautiful bhajan. And with these thoughts and reflections, let us proceed to listening to this complete version of this bhajan as sung by our beloved Bhagwan. Let us listen to Swami singing this bhajan for all of us.